if tears began to rise. World of strange design.
This is chaos. Vedant Yippee-O-Kaye here.
Vedant here.
Vedant Doo-Doo-Doo here.
Vedant Shush here.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Look Through the Chaos, the podcast. My name is Dwayne Patterson. You can find me on lookthroughthechaos.com. You can read me over at Twitter/X at Radioblogger. I am joined, as I am virtually every time, by my partner at Look Through the Chaos, former Congressman John Campbell of California. He is back in Arizona today. You can read John online at Twitter/X at Look Through Chaos. That's LOOKTHRU, as in drive through. Look Through Chaos. Of course, you can read them occasionally over at lookthroughthechaos.com as well. We are going to start with some sad news. As we were setting up for recording this broadcast, we learned that former vice president candidate for the Democratic Party, former Connecticut senator, longtime Connecticut senator, longtime Democrat, Joseph Lieberman, died at the age of 82. A brief statement from his family in New York. Former United States Senator Joseph I. Lieberman died this afternoon, March 27th, in New York City due to complications from a fall. He was 82 years old. His beloved wife, Hadassah, and members of his family were with him as he passed. Senator Lieberman's love of God, his family, and America endured throughout his life of service in the public interest. His funeral will be held on Friday, March 29th, at Congregation Aguta Shalom in his hometown of Stamford, Connecticut. An additional memorial service will be announced at a later date. John Campbell, sad news. Now, we disagreed with Senator Lieberman on quite a bit of things policy-wise, but as far as a person, he was a rock-solid guy and honest as a day is long.
He was. I never actually met him. We did not serve together. He was out of the Senate by the time I got there. And so we did not serve together. So I didn't know him personally. But certainly everything I knew of him was that he was the sort of person, the sort of senator that I'm afraid seems to be passing right now. I mean, and when I say passing, I don't mean passing away, but that we're having fewer and fewer of in this deliberative body, the world's greatest deliberative body that we know of as the United States Senate, where you could disagree with someone without being disagreeable. I realize that's a trite phrase, but it's true. And someone whom you could absolutely trust. When Joe Lieberman took a position on something, he didn't take it because it was politically expedient. He took it because he believed in it. And even if you disagreed with him, as long as you knew where he was coming from, you could work with people like that. And I always could work with Democrats who came from a place of, I believe this because I believe, great, I understand that. I disagree with you. Let's talk through it. Where do we both want this to go? And I wish there were more people around like that today. Part of the reason I think we are headed towards political chaos is that there's fewer and fewer people. And I've said often before that it used to be that Republicans and Democrats wanted the same thing. They just disagreed on how to get there.
Correct.
But what I'm afraid we see now is the country that the Democratic Party wants, or certainly that the base and the leadership of the Democratic Party wants, is not the same country that Republicans want and many independents, that we no longer want the same thing. And that's very hard to compromise and make agreements when you don't want the same thing.
If you want to take a look at how far the Democratic Party has moved from where they once were, it's really not that long of a stretch of time. In the year 2000, Joe Lieberman was the vice presidential nominee for the Democratic Party for on the national ticket. Here we are 24 years later. Do you think that Joe Lieberman could be elected in Connecticut? Do you think Joe Lieberman would be considered on a ticket anywhere as the staunch supporter of Israel that he always has been, John? Do you think the Democratic Party would accept him today?
No, of course not. And he left the Democratic Party some right. years ago, I can't remember when, and became officially a registered independent. And he was, I believe, he was doing a lot with No Labels. I think he was talking to them. So I always thought that at some point he would cross over and perhaps become a Republican. But I think that was just a bridge too far for a classical liberal, which is what he was. Not a leftist, you know, not a neo-Marxist in any sense of the word, but a classical liberal.
Big, he was just a big government liberal. You know, he wanted government right. to have more control over you know, economic issues, and he was an economic liberal.
Right. It was just a bridge too far. But the Democratic Party would never accept anybody like him the way they are constructed today.
Okay. Let's move on to the bread and butter that we like to do here on Look Through the Chaos, which is economic news, and tap on John's experience serving on the House Financial Services Committee while he was in Congress. He grilled members of the Fed in committee hearings while he had the gavel. Here is three different stories I want to cover today, and I'll give you just a quick synopsis of the headlines, and then you bridge them together however you want. You separate them however you want to address these different subjects. But these are three things that caught my attention this week. This is out of the Financial Times, a story that it would not surprise me that future economic history books were to look back at this last week, and central banking is marking a move away from strict inflation targeting by the world's most influential central banks. The bottom line is there is a trial balloon out of the central banks all over the world that we may be trying to inflate our way out of debt. And I know that's a kind of a big theory term to a lot of people. They don't understand what that means. It doesn't sound good, but I think you need to explain to people why, what that actually is, if they really are doing it, and why that's a bad thing. So that's one. Two, for the last few years, this is actually from John's Look Through Chaos Twitter account. For the last number of years, the Fed was profitable, and they returned that profit to the Treasury, thereby lowering the deficit. Like many things, that has now reversed and adds to the ever-increasing deficit. So the Fed's losing money. That can't be a good thing. Third, also in the Financial Times, the U.S. now faces a Liz Truss, former UK Prime Minister, style market shock as debt soars, warns watchdog fiscal burden on unprecedented past, says independent Congressional Budget Office head Philip Swagel. John Campbell, what do we make of the economic news? To me, there's a lot of chaos out there. What do we make of this?
Yeah, what we make, I think, is that, as you say, there's a lot of inflection points that we're hitting economically in a big scale. I'm not talking about, you know, unemployment or whatever, but monetary policy, fiscal policy, a lot of inflection points that we appear to be nearing that are a little bit scary. The first one you talked about, inflating away the debt, the Fed certainly sent a message a week ago that whereas Chairman Powell said over and over again, 2%, 2%, 2%, but it may take us a while to get there. So in other words, yeah, we want 2%, but if that's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, and in the meantime, it's 3%, 4%, 5%, perhaps we can live with that. And even Japan, where they actually raised interest rates lately, they didn't raise them as much as everyone expected. And so it was what they called a dovish interest rate hike in Japan. And you've seen some other central banks indicate that they may lower interest rates a little bit, even though inflation is still running in these countries. So it doesn't appear to be coordinated. It doesn't seem like the Fed is talking to the Bank of England, is talking to the Bank of Japan, is talking to the European Central Bank, or is talking to the Bank of Australia, all these different central banks. But they all seem to be looking at what's going on out there and saying, you know what, if we have a little 3% inflation, 4% inflation, 5% inflation, that's probably better than if we clamp down on it too hard. What inflating away debt means is very simply this. If I borrow from you $100 today and I don't owe it back to you for 10 years, at 10 years from now, everything doubles in price. Okay, so there's double inflation. The $100 I pay to you 10 years from now isn't worth the same as the $100 I borrowed from you. So it makes it easier for me to pay it back. And that is how governments like Argentina, Turkey, and others all over South America in particular, and Africa and other countries, third world countries, have taken care of their debt problems for decades, is inflate them away. Uh-oh, the U.S. owes $35 trillion in debt right now. Well, if the price of everything doubled, then that $35 trillion effectively becomes half over time that you have to pay back. So that seems to be one of the things. The Fed loss is just all that's going to do is make the deficit worse. In the past few years, the past decade, the Fed's been sending about $300 billion a year to the Treasury. How does the Fed lose money? The Fed has a balance sheet. It gets interest income from treasuries that it owns, but it also pays banks on the reserves they put with the Fed. And right now, the Fed is making less money from the treasuries it owns than the money it's paying to the banks. A year, 2 years ago, that was the opposite. And that's actual money going in and out. I mean, that's not paper, because the money that they're paying the banks on Federal Reserves, that's actual cash leaving the Treasury, leaving the Fed going out. So the Federal Reserve has helped the deficit for the last 10 years. And now that's flipped. So now it's the other way. So these are more things increasing the deficit. So the deficit is $2 trillion, marching towards $3, et cetera, et cetera. There's absolutely nothing right at the moment that is trending the deficit to be less. Revenue, tax receipts are running below what they expected them to be. We know that spending is more and more. Everything I read, I mean, I know we're not going to talk to it today because we're not going to get to it probably, but this bridge thing in Baltimore. So I see the first thing they want to do is have the Federal Reserve, have Congress, when they come back in 2 weeks, Congress is out for 2 weeks. But when they come back, have them authorize $250 million to replace the bridge. Well, wait a minute. The ship ran into the bridge. They ought to pay for the damn bridge. Okay, yes. The federal government doesn't pay for the bridge. The ship, or if they're insured and the insurance company's based, somebody like that pays for the bridge. Federal government doesn't pay for the bridge. But anyway, but it's just like, we just have to do this. Okay, so it's another $250 million. What are we going to do? We're going to borrow it. And so everything you do, the deficit just gets bigger and bigger. So the Liz Truss style thing that you mentioned was that, you know, the UK has gilts. They're like treasury bills. It's their form of a treasury debt. And those were going along fine until one day they weren't. And you couldn't sell them. And it just stopped. And the whole gilt market froze. And that is a panic moment for any government. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's the UK, the EU, Germany, Japan, Argentina, or the United States of America. And with more and more and more debt, there's people out there saying, you know, at some point here, you're going to have trouble selling this stuff. And oftentimes, what happened with the gilt crisis is literally a week before, everybody thought was fine. And then they put some debt out there and just nobody showed up to buy it. And when nobody shows up to buy it, it doesn't sell. The government freezes. And there's more and more intelligent voices in the economic world that are looking at that and saying, we're edging closer and closer to this happening. You never know when it's going to happen. And like in the UK, you oftentimes don't know it's going to happen until literally it's right in front of you. But nobody is doing anything to make it less likely. The Federal Reserve is going to lose 100 and something billion this year. That adds to the deficit. Everything we do, spend more, spend more, spend more, and revenues are down. So it's just deficit after deficit, which means debt, borrow, 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 borrow. And at some point, the people borrowing may shut the tap off. And that's what they're worried about. So you put all three of those things together, and we're running along swimmingly in the economy. GDP right now looks like it's going to be 2.2% for the quarter that ends on Easter Sunday. And that's not rock'em sock'em, go kill 'em growth.
That's plodding along, but it's plodding along positive, not negative.
Correct. And unemployment is still 4% or less, you know, and it's still pretty good. I mean, I remember when I was an economic student at UCLA back in the early 70s, 5%, anything below 5% was considered full employment. So that's all pretty good and all that's happened. But why is that happening? That's happening because the government is pumping fiscal money and liquidity. It's that deficit, that $2 trillion deficit. Remember, all that is that's $2 trillion that the government's handing out to somebody that somebody doesn't have to pay to the government for. And how do they do it? With debt. So right now it's stoking the economy. It's making things all feel good. And everybody's feeling good. The economy's great. But it's all being done on debt. It's just like if I go out and I borrow a bunch of money on my credit cards and I go to Europe and I go to every Taylor Swift concert and sit in the front row and I buy a Lamborghini and I do all this stuff. And everybody will look at me and say, look at that John Campbell. My gosh, that guy's living the life of Riley. Does anybody say that anymore? The life of Riley?
No.
Okay. Well, no. I just did. So anyway, that guy's living the life of Riley. Look at it. He must be doing great, but I'm doing it all on debt. And at some point I'll put that credit card in the little chip thing and it's going to say, I'm sorry, your credit card's been denied. I'll go, what? Your credit card's been denied. What do you mean it's been denied? I'm sorry.
Then all of a sudden your lifestyle changes quite a bit, doesn't it?
They won't lend you any more money. Then all of a sudden, well, I got a problem because I can't pay back that debt I ran up and it's gone because I spent it on, you know, on trips and Taylor Swift tickets.
On five-door Ford electric sedans.
Well, that's a great value. If I'd spent it on that, that would be an outstanding value. But I didn't. I bought a Lamborghini. But anyway, so we need to keep an eye on all that economic stuff. It is worrisome. We're going to cook along, and it's going to be fine until it's not. But when it's not, it's going to be a little ugly, I'm afraid.
Okay. So before we leave this topic, you brought up two things that I just want to buttress here. There is a story this week that consumer credit card debt by age cohort, since Joe Biden took office and today has gone up 20%, 30%, 40%, depending on age group. So the country is resonating and doing exactly what you were talking about in that analogy. They are running up the credit card bills to try to keep up with what's going on today. And at some point, that bill is going to come due. It's you know, you can't suspend the laws of economics forever. You also mentioned the bridge and the impact it's going to have on the Baltimore port. Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation and Potholes of South Bend, Indiana, when he was mayor, took to the White House press briefing on Wednesday. And he had this forecast about whether there's going to be any economic forecast out of the port being closed for an extended period of time while they clean up the mess, and whether or not it's going to affect supply chain problems, which we learned a lot about after the pandemic. Cut number four.
Talk on inflation.
Too soon to say. I think, this is definitely a different ballpark from what we saw with the West Coast issues in 2021. But that's part of what we hope to gather more data on soon. I will say, you know, a lot of the disinflation that we've seen has been a result of the work that the president led to improve and smooth out our supply chains.
Okay, so when the Secretary of Transportation says it's too soon to tell whether there's going to be supply chain issues as a result of the bridge falling in the drink, keeping the port closed so that, you know, commercial ships can't go in and out. How do I believe him when literally in the next breath he says the disinflation we're seeing? There is no disinflation, John Campbell.
Well, disinflation is not the same as deflation. Disinflation just means the inflation rate coming down. It was 9%. It's now like 4%. So it is down. So there has been disinflation.
It's 4% over last year's 9%.
Well, I understand. But the part of that statement that just blew my ears out was that the president fixed the supply chain. The president did nothing. The supply chain, the president doesn't do anything with the supply chain. Those are individual companies and entities and countries, and there's a million factors in that supply chain. And you look at what's happening in this port right now, for example. I was just reading today, it is the biggest auto import port in the country. 1 million cars came in through that port last year.
Well, not but, anymore.
Well, interestingly, some of them, Volkswagens, their hub where they get it is on the other side of the bridge. So they're fine.
Okay.
So they're fine. And there's another manufacturer that's on the other side of the bridge. But like Mazda, Subaru, and some others were on the inland side of the bridge, which means they can't get to that. It's also one of the biggest coal exporting. So we load coal in there and export it. And I also read today that both GM and Ford say they get parts through there. And so they're trying to figure out how they can do that, because it's, remember this during the pandemic, you can't make a car with only 99% of the parts. You kind of need them all. And so there's going to be some issues there, but what you're saying
is it's not too soon to determine whether it's going to impact the supply chain. It already is. Because companies are already having to create workarounds, and that's going to cause extra costs, and it's going to cause delays.
And the companies are doing it. Joe Biden is not.
Right. Exactly.
So let's
move on to crime, because there's one specific thing that took place within the last 30 days that has been kind of a poster for everything that is wrong with democratic governance. In New York City, there is a police officer named Jonathan Diller who pulled over a suspect for a traffic stop, and the suspect rolled down his window and shot Diller, and he ended up succumbing to his injuries. He has passed away, leaves behind a one-year-old baby, a fairly new wife, and everybody naturally is mourning the death of Jonathan Diller, except the White House, who can't say the name of Jonathan Diller. Here is Karine Jean-Pierre at the White House briefing yesterday talking about the death of somebody she can't name and won't put a face on it, but she has a reason for the senseless violence. Cut number two.
Relates to the death of the officer. Look, our hearts go out to this officer who tragically lost his life in the line of duty. We're also praying for his family during this difficult time, who now has an empty seat at their dinner table. President Biden is deeply grateful for the sacrifices police officers make to keep our community safe. This shooting is yet another painful reminder of the toll of gun violence, that what it's doing to inflict on families and our communities and our nation. And that's why the president signed more than 24 executive actions. That's why we're able to pass a bipartisan agreement to deal with the gun violence that we're seeing in this country. Obviously, more work needs to be done. We need Congress to continue to act on making sure that our communities are safe. Again, our hearts go out to this officer and his family. It's a difficult time for them.
Now, if that's all you know about the story, well, I feel sorry for you, because you're an idiot. There is more to the story. Eric Adams, I'm doing this to wind up John Campbell, then I'm going to step aside and let him
and
go.
It's working. Oh, my God, is it working?
I know how to push his buttons. I've known John for a long, long time. I know how to push his buttons. Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, held a press conference a couple of days ago, and he was mourning the death of Jonathan Diller. He at least says his last name in here, which is good. And then he laments what's going on out there in the street. He bemoans the fact that we have a problem. And here's what Eric Adams said, cut number three.
Can I say it any clearer? It is the good guys against the bad guys. And these bad guys are violent. They carry guns. And the symbol of our public safety, which is that police uniform, they have a total disregard for. And this incident took place in the neighborhood. I learned just a few moments ago it was right outside of Councilwoman Sabina Brooks Powers' office. And just watching people walk down the block as these dangerous individual inflicted a level of violence that took the life of a police officer, of a husband, of a son. And we could see it as the role that police officers play every day as they move towards violence. But the reality is, this is a loved one that we lost, a young man. My heart goes out to Jonathan's family, Stephanie, and all that are in the room, giving them the support. This is a devastating moment, one of the most difficult processes I have as the mayor of the city of New York. It's my obligation to keep the men and women who wear that uniform safe.
So we have good guys versus bad guys, a binary world, according to Eric Adams, and we have a total disregard for authority of people wearing the uniform on the street, and how awful this is, John Campbell. What is missing out of the reporting of Eric Adams and Corinne Jean-Pierre that is salient to this conversation?
The fact that he had been arrested 21 times before. Yes. Many of them for violent. Yeah. Yeah. Many of them for violent acts. And he was out there on the street. Yeah. Yeah. So that is the Paul Harvey's rest of the story.
So, I mean, you remember the days of the three strikes law, and everybody thought that
it was,
I mean, that was your wheelhouse in Congress, right?
That was before California. California did that first.
Yeah.
Did that first. First in the nation to do three strikes laws. That was before California became the S-hole that it is currently, and went completely the other way. But the three strikes law was great. Crime collapsed in California. It went down to almost nothing during the three strikes law because people knew, you know, I not 21 strikes, but I do three of these. I'm gone for life, gone. Out, never back on the street again. And so they didn't do it. And if they did, they went for life, and then they didn't do 17 more priors and then kill a police officer.
So if this guy has done this 21 prior times, and Eric Adams is lamenting the fact that there's no respect for the uniform on the street, what did he think is going to happen?
Yeah, and Corinne Jean-Pierre, obviously, they always go to gun control. Does anybody think with 21 priors and a bunch of violent felonies, if you repealed the Second Amendment, repealed it, and made the ownership or possession of a firearm of any sort illegal in the United States, does anybody believe he wouldn't commit crime number 22 and get one? Given that there's more guns than people in the United States today. So you could send, you know, the jackbooted people up to every door to run in and take guns. And if you take half of them, there's still going to be 160 million of them out there. And the law-abiding people won't break the law, but these people will. So they'll always have a gun. So, I mean, the idea that gun control would impact a guy like this in any way is ridiculous. But let's talk about what the crux of the problem is. The crux of the problem is the George Soros enforcement and the fact that these people commit these crimes and they go right back out on the street. And
so Eric Adams' own definition, they're part of the bad guys, right? Because they're enabling the bad guys.
They are. And
if it's a binary world.
This is part of the, why does George Soros and the left, why do they do this? You know, why are they in favor of murderers, rapists, armed robbers, burglars, criminals of all sorts, that they let them back out on the street? Why do they, you know, they say that, well, they're doing it because of systemic racism, or they're doing it because of this, or they're doing it because of that. But the bottom line is what the neo-Marxists want is they want to take down American society as it is. And one of the ways you do that is by having rampant crime. And that starts to dismember the fabric of society, and they can replace it with their neo-Marxist fabric. And that's what they want. But let me give you an example of this. Remember, I mean, we have this officer's name. We have various other names. I mean, there's someone I see on X every day some new person was killed by an illegal alien. It's like literally every day. But the one we look at as the name that we want to repeat over and over is Laken Riley, right? And Laken Riley was murdered by an illegal alien in Athens, Georgia, which is like San Francisco, California. It's a city county. The city and the county are the same.
It's a college town.
Right. So the DA in Athens, Georgia, who happens to be one of these George Soros types, and this is stuff that, again, what we like to give you on this podcast is stuff you don't hear everywhere. Last year, there were just slightly over 250 felony arrests in the county of Athens, Georgia. How many of those 250 felony arrests were those people in jail?
Oh, my. You mean how many of them would have been in jail but got released?
No, how many of them went to jail?
Went to jail
out of 250 and were not released on bond or their own recognizance or whatever. How many out of the 250?
40.
Yeah, zero.
Zero?
Zero.
Oh, well, okay. Not, if you're going to have that kind of rate.
Not a single one. So all 250 of those felons were immediately back on the street in Athens, Georgia.
I figured 40 of them had to be white.
That's probably a good, you have a point there. But you know, maybe they, who knows why they released them too. But they did. So zero. This is the problem.
That's astounding.
This is the problem. It's these no bail laws, these George Soros prosecutors. Now, one thing will be interesting to watch. The DA in San Francisco was replaced in an election after letting all these criminals loose. One of the worst DAs in the country. Well, I mean, there's New York, there's Athens, Georgia. There's a lot of them. There's a bunch of them. But one of them is George Gascon in Los Angeles.
Right.
And he is up for re-election. And there was an election in the primary, and there were like, I don't know, 15 names on the ballot or something. He only got 20-something percent of the vote. But there were like 15 names on the ballot. So there's a runoff. And it's between George Gascon and a guy named Nathan Hochman.
And, oh, we like Nathan Hochman.
I know. And so, but we need to watch this and see what happens. Soros will put whatever money he needs to behind George Gascon. Nathan Hochman was a Republican, and he actually ran for attorney general in California as a Republican and lost, as every Republican running for statewide office in California, with the exception of Arnold Schwarzenegger, has done in this century. Every single Republican running for statewide office in California since 1998 has lost, except for the two times Arnold Schwarzenegger won. But so he re-registered as an independent. It's a nonpartisan office, but he re-registered as an independent. So already they're running ads in Los Angeles County with George Soros money saying Nathan Hochman is a Republican. This is in a county that has, what are there, 15% Republicans in LA County? I don't know what it is, but it's small, or 20% or something like that. Any sensible person, which means by definition would include most Republicans, won't live in LA anymore. But that election will be in November, and we'll see what happens. But if George Gascon is not defeated, if with the record he has there of letting people back on the streets, of crime increasing and increasing and increasing, but if the George Soros money gets him back reelected in Los Angeles, then there is no hope for any of these cities. There is no hope for Chicago, no hope for New York City, no hope for Portland or Seattle or San Francisco or Los Angeles or any of these big blue cities that have these district attorneys like this. This is where the rubber meets the road, folks. We all talk about who's going to be president, who's going to be in Congress, who's going to be, and that's important. But the people who are going to murder you or rape you or break into your house in your community, wherever you live, what's going to stop that are are the prosecutions, are the district attorneys, the attorney in your county or in your city, city attorneys in your city, district attorneys in your county, attorney generals in your state. Those people are going to make the difference, and the legislature in your state that makes the laws, whether there's no bail or not, and that sort of thing. But those are the people who will keep you safe. The cops will keep you safe if they're allowed to, but they have to be allowed to by
right.
by who they report to. And you also have to have a, but why would anybody want to be a cop in New York City when you see stuff like this? Why would you want to do that? And they're having a problem with that. I see they're in Seattle, they're paying all kinds of money trying to get a cop. Nobody wants to be a cop in Seattle because the city, the people that run that city and the DAs and city attorneys and so forth and attorney generals in that leftist place won't support the cops. They won't stand with them. They won't stand by them. So why do you want to, you know, it's like, why do you want to work for somebody that hates you and won't let you do your job? And that's what they do. Anyway, done with
okay,
that rant.
So, but I'm going to now blend into that rant and lead it into a transition into what we started to talk about there, which is the immigration problem. There was a story out of Alabama this week. You mentioned Lincoln Riley, who is, again, the face of Joe Biden's immigration problem, his illegal problem when it manifests itself in crime all over the country.
Yep.
And, you know, you let 9 million people in, a percentage of them are going to commit violent felonies. They just are. It's just,
and as I've said, if it's only 1%, it's still 90,000 people,
yes.
right?
Right.
It's still 90,000.
You have 90,000. You have
brand
90,000
criminals.
Brand new violent felonies waiting
Correct.
To happen.
Correct.
And every time one of these happens, it's going to have Joe Biden's name and or the Democrat running that state and or senator, congressman, whatever. It's going to be an albatross around their neck.
You remember Willie Horton?
Of course I do. Absolutely.
In the election, the George H.W. Bush, wasn't that? Yeah. Wasn't that election, 92? I'm sorry, 88. Yeah.
And it destroyed Dukakis, right?
And beat Dukakis, right. And it showed
right.
this revolving door. For those of you who aren't old enough to remember this, it was the election of 88. It was a brilliant ad that George H.W. Bush for president campaign ran that showed, because George Dukakis had created something like we're seeing today, and it was a revolving door of a prison. And these people came out of the prison, they committed a crime, and they just went back out on the street,
back out on the street,
and committed crimes. And Willie Horton was one of those who he had let out, and his policies had let out and committed murder. And so we need to... Lake and Riley or something like that is, as you say, is the face that in this election, we need to put Joe Biden's face all over these people because it is him doing this. It is not the gun. It is the fact that these people commit crimes and we let them loose.
Yes.
This is not their first crime. If they come out of the blue, you know, like somebody in a Perry Mason deal and they've never committed a crime before in their life. Okay. You know, that's different. You couldn't have stopped that, blah, 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 blah. But these people that have committed 21 different crimes and they just keep getting let out and until finally they murder somebody, then they may get out again. Even after that. And if there's no bail, if you're in a community with no bail, then there's no bail. So that person gets arrested and does not go to jail awaiting trial. They are released awaiting trial. And we now have seen several places in the country recently where that has happened and they commit a murder, another murder, within 24 hours. Within 24 hours. Talk about a totally preventable murder and nothing to do with a gun, in some cases with a knife, but nothing to do with gun violence. These people need to go away forever. Forever. And I'm a big supporter of the death penalty, always have been, still am. And in a lot of cases, that is what should happen. As I heard one time, some decades ago, someone was going into whatever form of execution they had in Texas. And somebody said, as a Christian, shouldn't, you know, you forgive this person? And the person said, God forgives the state of Texas does not. And I always thought that was a wonderful line, an absolutely wonderful line. God can forgive that person, but the state of Texas should not, and hence execution. But anyway.
Okay, so let me take you down to Dothan, Alabama, where we had this report out of WDHN, the ABC affiliate in Dothan, Alabama, about another instance, and this one doesn't even involve a gun necessarily. Let's play cut number 7.
This morning, an illegal immigrant man is behind bars accused of raping a mentally incapacitated teen. Enterprise police arrested Pablo Mendoza after getting word of a crime happening last month. Sheriff Scott Byrd confirmed to WDHN that Mendoza is in the United States illegally. Authorities say that Mendoza had sex with a teen, and the teen could not consent due to her being, quote, physically helpless or mentally incapacitated. Mendoza is charged with the rape in the first degree and is currently being held in the Coffee County Jail without bond.
Now, John Campbell, let's talk about the politics of this and whether this is going to impact the electorate in November. The Laken Riley thing was a national story, and she became, you know, the face of this prize, of this problem, of this crisis. But she's by no means the only victim of violent crime by an illegal alien here. And there's been half a dozen just in the last week alone. This is just the most recent. This just happened. This story just appeared on Wednesday. Is this going to be a thing when it comes to November? Is this going to drive the electorate? Is this something where Joe Biden's immigration policy, such that it is going to come back and bite him?
It should. Polling shows that it will, but Chuck Todd is not going to cover it.
I doubt this is going to be a Chuck Todd covered thing.
No, it is interesting to watch how the Democrats have transformed. One of the Democratic bases is younger women, right? That's a lot of their base, and particularly younger unmarried women,
right,
which I've seen statistics that like 60-something percent of those of young unmarried women, even 70% vote Democrat.
How vulnerable do you think they feel right now?
Well, and this is the thing. Yeah, when Democrats appeal to women, they abortion is one. But standing up for rape victims. You remember that? It wasn't that long ago. You know, you always believe the woman. Rape victims, always believe the woman. There were these people at colleges and the kids that were accused of rape were immediately expelled from the colleges because you believe the woman and it's important. And this was part of the whole Democratic Party's marketing to these women, was that we're the party that stands to protect you from rapists and rape. Have you heard that in the last 3 or 4 years?
Well, unless, of course, the little small print clause in that doctrine is if the victim is Jewish and the perpetrator belongs to Hamas, in which case that goes out the window.
Correct. They have dropped the whole rape. It's like gone. It's like absolutely gone. They don't, because of what you just mentioned, but also because of all these illegals and so forth doing this. And now all of a sudden they don't even talk about it anymore. They don't even talk about it. So instead, their whole appeal to young, particularly unmarried, but young women, is reproductive rights. That's their whole appeal. They've completely dropped the other. It's absolutely amazing. When they thought that rapes were being carried forth by white college students, then this was a big deal. Now, as you say, if it's Muslims or illegal aliens, then, well, you know, we really can't blame them for that. I mean, or we really don't need to talk about it. Or I bet it really didn't happen. I bet the woman isn't, you know, they're probably exaggerating it. They probably didn't. It's stunning. It's a 180-degree turn from a few years ago. And so I would hope that at some point people realize that particularly some of these young unmarried women, that the Democrats aren't the party that is protecting them from rape anymore. In fact, they're precisely the opposite. So it should be an issue. But of course, one of the things is, and We'll get to it all over time, but the Democrats are going to have so much more money. And I live in a purple state, so I'm going to see it. You don't. So you're not going to see it. But it's going to be everywhere here. But they will have so much more money for the presidential and the Senate races and the House races that you know, Chuck Todd's not going to cover it. Will this message, will it get out? You know, will we be able to get it out? That I think is the big question.
Okay, so we're going to get to Chuck Todd and the media in just a second. We are leaning in that direction, and boy, we've been saving the best of last year. But just quickly on the immigration thing, there's a story out of the New York Post this week that the New York City authorities are now going to start handing out debit cards for illegals, cash cards for illegals. The Senate Democrats, led by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin and 17 of his colleagues, sent a letter to Joe Biden saying, move faster, please. Do what you can, even if it's outside of what we would normally call the law in these parts. Do what you can to normalize all these people that you now have here illegally, because they need them to vote, John. It's so naked what they're trying to do. It's preposterous. Dick Durbin wants to regularize and normalize everyone that's come here, regardless of their background, regardless of who they are, because they need the votes, John.
Right. And this is how Democrats do things. They do incrementalism. Remember the illegal aliens of 20 years ago, and it was all about, no, we just want to be able to get a job. Because they're doing jobs that Americans won't do, which is BS. But we just want to be able to get a job. And then it's like, well, we want. And so now in California, they get free health care. That's already law there. So I don't know if they get debit cards yet, but I'm sure they will. And in a number of places, including San Francisco, I believe Seattle or Portland, some places now they can vote and they can hold office.
They can serve on boards and they can run for certain offices and they don't even have to be a citizen of the country.
There's already a couple of illegal aliens on city councils around the country. They're already elected to city councils as illegal aliens. So this is what it's going and soon. And this is how the Democrats do stuff. They're actually very brilliant about it, much better at than we are of this incrementalism. Oh, this is all we really want. And then when they get it, well, we now need this, and they get that, and they move it on and on. And yes, what they want to do is regularize them, so there is no distinction between, and I remember some Democrats, after getting a few drinks in them, that would tell me that if someone was present in the United States, then they should have all the rights of a citizen. And I said, so, you know, they came over to go to SeaWorld, they get all the rights of, well, if they're here, they can vote. On November 5th or whatever it is.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's come across the roundhouse turn and make our way home here and talk about our favorite subject, which is media bias. Since we last convened...
Not bias, propaganda. It's not bias.
Yes,
bias
yes.
is not...
Okay,
look, I adopted your regime media. I love
regime
that term.
Media, yes.
I have adopted that. So you have to say media propaganda. It is not
okay.
bias. It's not.
Okay.
It's not.
So since the last time we convened, the former chair of the Republican National Committee, Ronna McDaniel, who is not exactly a flaming right winger by any ideological objective standards.
Why is she no longer the chairman of the party? Because Trump didn't want her.
Right. Right. And the right side of the party didn't like her because
she hates her
with a passion.
Yeah.
Now, I've known her for a long time. I think there's a lot of structural things within the party she did really, really well. I have no problems with her whatsoever. So NBC offers her a valid contract signed. The ink isn't even dry on the contract yet. And the outrage by Chuck Todd and Rachel Maddow and all of the crazies on MSNBC forced NBC to cave to the mob and fire Ronna McDaniel, opening up to God knows what kind of a tort lawsuit for violating the contract. They're going to have to buy out the contract. But here is the fun part about this. In the process of this, what we have seen on Hugh Hewitt's show on Wednesday is Hugh came out of the starting gate today on Wednesday, and what we heard was John Campbell 10 years ago.
Yes,
Hugh
I
was
know.
Saying it is time for NBC to never get a Republican debate again. Hugh said that we should no longer have Republicans or conservatives go on any of these Sunday shows. They shouldn't participate in any of the NBC nonsense because it's not just a disease relegated to the MSNBC cable channel. This is NBC News proper. It is systemic from the top down. Hugh said Rachel Maddow owns that. Where I differ, I think Chuck Todd owns NBC News. I think Chuck Todd is the president of NBC News. And for longtime listeners of this podcast, either when it was within the universe, when we would have our weekly conversations, or here, Chuck Todd was always not the worst offender of media propaganda, but he was the repository in the face of everything that was wrong with media. And when we started this podcast, he no longer hosted Meet the Press, and we were trying to come up with an alternative to be that repository for everything that was wrong, the symbol for everything that was wrong. But now, I don't think we ever have to do that again, because Chuck Todd owns NBC News.
Yeah, and he
went on. What do you think,
on,
John?
Yeah, I agree completely. We were pivoting to George Snuffleupagus, which is a great name and so forth too. And he's every bit as bad, if not worse. But yeah, I think so too. And the reason I picked Chuck Todd was when I used to guest host for Hugh Hewitt. Chuck Todd was a regular guest on Fridays, and I had to interview him because I did a lot of Fridays as guest hosting. And oh my gosh, I want to take a shower. When you fill in for somebody like Hugh Hewitt, it's
right.
His show. I can't mess with his show. I'm not going to trash his regular guest, but it was hard. I mean, I had to be nice to him, and he would say things that I knew were absolute bald-faced lies, and he would set up like he was Mr. Balance, Mr. This, Mr. That, and I had to be nice. It's Hugh's show. I can't. This is Hugh's guest. I can't do this. I had to, and so I do it. But I totally took a shower after I talked to him every time. And he's just such a slime ball. And again, what I've always said about this is if somebody is a left winger and they're on TV and they make it clear, I am a left winger and that is what I'm going to do and that is what I'm going to talk about, that's fine. That's great. It's a free country. No problem. No problem. What I dislike is when you come on and say, we have no bias here. I only give the facts, only the truth, and only want to give you the facts and the truth completely without an agenda and completely without bias or any messaging. Okay, now I paraphrased what Chuck Todd said on NBC for years about what his position was, and that was a complete bald-faced lie. And they have always had an agenda. They don't give the facts and the truth, and they are propaganda. And so it just drove me nuts. And what we saw this last week on Meet the Press, where he talked to his replacement and said that
the network owed her an apology.
Yeah, for hiring a Republican who's kind of a mainstream Republican that right-wing Republicans don't like. I mean, it's so it's not like, you know, they hired. Nancy Mace or somebody, Gates, somebody like that. It wasn't that. This is a fairly middle of the road Republican, and they said you owed an apology, which was finally once. I for this reason, I guess maybe I should start to respect Chuck Todd for at least saying this, but he didn't say it. He should have said. He basically said in so many words, we are NBC News. We have a narrative we are promoting, and we cannot have anybody on here that challenges that narrative. That cannot happen on NBC News. And that is basically what he said. So finally, in a sense, the truth.
Well, so let's wind it up here and just relish in the fact that Hugh Hewitt has now come to the place where John Campbell was 10 years ago on boycotting the media. Republicans shouldn't go on these Sunday shows. They shouldn't go on...
And not just NBC. They shouldn't go on CBS or ABC. They're no better. Well, not much better.
Not much better. Anyway, for John Campbell, you can see him on Twitter at LookThroughChaos or myself, Dwayne Patterson, at RadioBlogger. We will be back next week with another edition of LookThroughTheChaos.com. Rate us, like us, and join us next time. See you, everybody.